Welcome to the Elevate podcast. My name is Sarah Hopkins.
And I'm Amanda Noga, and these are conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul.
Hey, it's Amanda. I'm quickly popping in to tell you about a special offer that you won't find anywhere else but here. So with the code ELEVATE, that's ELEVATE, simply pop that in to receive your first month off free in Paths to You. And once you're inside, there's a suggestion of exactly how to start your journey. Of course, you can also choose your own adventure, create your own pathway, maybe starting with Ayurveda and discovering your dosha, maybe moving through the Passion, Power, and Purpose workshops, which is all about living a more meaningful life. And you'll have unlimited support through all of the embodiment and yoga practices. One of the most beautiful things about Paths to You is that you'll receive access to our free and private membership area, which is where your like-minded, like-hearted crew are hanging out. And you'll also get access to my online class, which happens once a month, where you can ask me any questions that you might have about your practice, about health, and of course, soul alignment. So I hope you find this episode super elevating, and I'll see you in Paths to You.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Elevate podcast. Today we're talking about a topic that I think is becoming, well, not I think, it's a fact, it's becoming super, super common in not just women, but in kids, in older people, and in men as well. It's anxiety. You already know that from the title. But we wanted to talk about it because Sarah and I both have had our own personal experiences with anxiety, and we have daily practices that help us to mitigate it, and I think that might be useful for some listeners. So I don't think it needs much definition. I think we all kind of know what anxiety is, right?
Well, I wouldn't mind just defining it a little bit, because I suppose when it comes to mental health issues, there's sort of two, obviously there's lots more, but there's two sort of major ones that are very common, and they are depression and anxiety. And they differ a little bit in that anxiety is probably, I mean, for me to just define it in the context of how I understand it, so obviously the disclaimer here is that I'm not a therapist, Amanda's not a therapist, we are not qualified to try and diagnose it, and we definitely don't ever try to do that. But my definition of anxiety is it's sort of more of the stress-based reaction to, you know, whatever the physiological trigger is, whereas depression is more like that sort of apathy and that sort of low energy response. That's the way I see it. So probably if I was to look at it from an energy perspective, which is obviously not scientific, but depression is low energy and anxiety is actually high energy.
The way I think about it as well is anxiety is usually about future orientated thought and worry, and depression is generally about past.
1,000,000%.
And I'll go into this later, but it's very much connected to the doshas and dosha 100%. Imbalance. So we'll go into that later, but I wanted to share a little story, because I think before I had this firsthand experience, I didn't really understand how severe anxiety can be and is for a lot of people. And it was a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and I definitely went into an anxious spiral. I don't know if I would call it an anxiety attack or a panic attack, but I think I was kind of in that realm. And I don't want to downplay anyone that is having those experiences on a severe and, you know, chronic level. But for me, I had gotten, of course, it was in the middle of the night. No surprise there. I had gone into a tornado of future-orientated worry and stressing about all these different things that were definitely not solvable or practical to think about at 3 o'clock in the morning. But I think this had been like accumulating over days and weeks, and just being having a low level of anxiety, just kind of humming below the surface. And then it kind of blew into this panic attack night where I really felt like in my body, I felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest and I could not get any breath in. And I have all the tools, I know all the things, like I was talking myself down, like, Amanda, you're safe, you're fine, just breathe, trying to do all these different pranayama and, you know, basically trying to self-soothe, but it really honestly didn't help in that moment when I felt like I cannot breathe, there's an elephant sitting on my chest. All of the tools kind of went out the window. And through having that experience, I can really now relate to, you know, how severe and how challenging it can be if you're experiencing that, even at a low level on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I can say, speaking professionally, I would say of all of the women that I see, a very large majority of them, when they first come to see me, are on antidepressants. And the particular brand of antidepressant, which is mostly Lexapro, not always, is actually an anti-anxiety medication, which other people that we know of in the sort of media sphere that talk about their anxiety, so I can probably say who they are.
So why do they call it an antidepressant?
This I don't know.
Okay.
So this is tricky. I suppose it's some sort of, well, it's some sort of...
Does it just kind of come under the umbrella of mind-altering?
They're all SSRIs, which is serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Yeah.
So maybe they work on different areas. The thing is, I was thinking about this because I used to think that anxiety was all about... We've changed topic a little bit, but that's okay. I'll come back. Anxiety was always about high cortisol levels, which it is, but it's also about, it is about the low serotonin as well, because that will...
Can you just give us like in a nutshell, what those two hormones are?
Well, serotonin is a feel-good neurotransmitter that helps us to stay happy and is obviously part of why people with depression are experiencing it, exactly, because they have low serotonin. But low serotonin can also play a role in predisposing us to anxiety. But what is also exacerbated in anxiety and probably is the easiest lever to pull in terms of changing the state is cortisol, which obviously I bang on about in every...
Which is the stress hormone.
Which is the stress hormone that is produced by our adrenals and is produced, you know, chronically in most humans at this point in our evolution. But back to my point, so I would say at least half of the females that I am seeing, and particularly actually as they are heading into or are past menopause, so this is interesting, are on antidepressants.
Mm.
And the brand of antidepressant that they're on is one that is for anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe, and this is just by observing my client base, which is hundreds of women, that it is certainly in the circles that I see, it is also in fairly large, if not epidemic, levels at this point.
Yeah, most of the women that I work with as well are in a younger age range, and not most, but a lot of them are on anti-anxiety medication.
It is just...
And I remember astounding. As well, like with the studio, a lot of, because it's part of something that is often disclaimed, a lot of students are on antidepressants. So I think it's more prevalent than what we might expect, because people don't talk about the fact that they're on medication.
A lot of people are taking medication, and I think the problem is now that it is being willingly and, in my opinion, overly prescribed as a solution to feelings.
And yes, it is important that we can kind of dissolve the stigma around mental health, but the glorification of medication is problematic.
Definitely. But even, you know, like, let's just talk about anxiety with or without medication and sort of the construct of anxiety, because I feel like it ties into, and this refers back to, I guess, our balance episode, but it does tie in to that glorification of busy. And I think that part of the reason that there is so much anxiety is because actually we are doing too much, mm-hmm. and that is stressful. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we are actually, or because of that, I should say, we're actually producing, our adrenals are producing too much cortisol. And so that is ultimately predisposing us to that anxiety. And then in turn, we're not sleeping as well as we are, and it becomes this vicious ongoing cycle. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the reasons why in our Western world, in this culture of glorification of busy, we are all so predisposed to it.
Mm-hmm. And another interesting point is the spike in anxiety in teens, particularly teen girls. And there's a lot of research now coming out about the link between, yeah, that rise in anxiety and a lot of suicide-related anxiety. Anxiety kind of induced suicide to do with social media and screens and online culture. That's kind of another whole topic, but
we will be covering that. There is a link there. Yeah, definitely.
And it is disturbing to know that our teen girls are experiencing anxiety in massive, massive numbers, higher than ever before.
Mm. So, and I guess another disclaimer for this episode, I know, for instance, Andy G, who is a well-known celebrity who has had very serious mental health issues.
I don't think that's his name anymore.
No, what's his name now?
Osher Ginsberg.
Osher, thank you. And hopefully everyone knows him now as Osher. So Osher has been very open about his mental health issues. And I think he has bipolar or something like that. So it's a little bit more severe. But he's a very open sort of promoter of the use of antidepressants.
An advocate.
And he uses a really beautiful analogy, and I can't think what it is. Is it like if you've got a boat and you don't have the oars? It's like they're the oars. It's something more profound, and I really can't. I'll see if I can find it, and I'll link in the show notes.
And there is a difference between, diagnosed mental health issues like that versus the daily anxiety and...
stress.
We'll stick to anxiety for this episode,
yes.
But the daily kind of low-level common
chronic
anxiety that isn't necessarily diagnosed, but we all feel.
Yes, exactly. And I guess that was my stipulation, is that for some people there might be some assistance gleaned from using these medications over the short term. None of them are designed for long-term use. And honestly, I'm seeing clients that have been on it for 20 years and no doctor has ever recommended that they come off it. And some of them...
Well, the process of coming off antidepressants is very,
yes,
very difficult.
Yes. So I think, just a little disclaimer that sometimes it might be a necessary tool, but certainly a tool that is used and then put down and that other tools are picked up. And I suppose, maybe that's a segue into... some of the tools that...
Well, the thing to understand is that the medication might, in the short term, recorrect the chemical imbalance or the hormonal imbalance in the brain, or might mask the kind of symptoms of that, but in the long term, there is still a imbalance in the hormones. And it's not helping to fix. It's like a band-aid rather than the cure sort of thing.
We're not correcting at all.
Exactly.
If we're using medication, we're not correcting. And I mean, I've seen clients that have been given anti-anxiety medication. One who lost her son tragically. He died in the shower. He had an aneurysm. And she was obviously very anxious and distraught. And the recommendation from the GP was for her to go on antidepressants. And she stayed on these with deteriorating all sorts of health issues for 20 plus years with no recommendation of transitioning off based on time to heal from the tragedy of that, or however long it was. Maybe it wasn't as long as that, but that's not a solution. That's
no.
A band-aid over something that needed to be processed
and this
worked
comes
through.
Back to, or comes down to, our fundamental misunderstanding about feeling and emotion.
Yes.
So I don't think we were going to go there in this conversation, but here we are. Anxiety is, I guess, the surface level choppiness at the top of the water, right? If we're imagining our mind or our body as a vessel of water, we've got these waves, we've got this kind of little ripples and waves chopping up the surface of the water. That's anxiety. That's that type of thought and feeling that can make us feel wound up and wired and scattered and all the things. So underneath that, though, especially if we're taking medication, there is a numbness and there is a denial of feeling. And sometimes it is easier not to feel all the feels. That's undeniable. But this is why I love yoga, because it helps us to feel what we are actually feeling and transmute that energy. Or, you know, energy for emotion is
energy
in motion. Emotion. Energy in motion, right? So under the anxiety, there's actually denial of feeling, which we could, let's for the sake of this conversation, call it numbness. But if we ask ourselves what's underneath that and we dive a little bit deeper into our inner waters, we're going to feel maybe fear or anger or pain, something that is more kind of at our core and is threatening us in one way or another. And more often than not, that threat is an illusion. But if we get underneath that, there is the grief, which is what's kind of reminded me when you were talking about your client who was denied the opportunity to grieve her son. And as a culture, we are really afraid of grief. And I see it even on like a tiny mini kind of micro level to the macro of, you know, we rush over the endings of things all the time. Even like to call it back into a really simple example, the closing part of a yoga practice in a normal class is often just rushed over. It's taking up 5 minutes of a 90-minute class. And not that there's a grief there, but it is really important to have closure. And we don't do that. We just rush into the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So what I'm saying is we want to get to the grief as quickly and, I guess, as swiftly as possible. So we're kind of moving through those layers of our waters at a pretty nice, swift pace. It's not to rush over things or deny what we're feeling, but to feel the fullness of that and really, accept and embrace grief as a natural human response to life, because there is heartbreak, there is loss, there is sorrow that we should grieve for. And this is important as a whole because underneath the grief is compassion, and this is where we learn to actually relate to one another. But does that make sense? It's like a cascade of emotions. And I think oftentimes these feelings of anxiety or depression are like the very top of the water of that deep grief that is being denied.
Well, I can't speak that much to anxiety except to say I have a predisposition to anxiety. So my constitution is anxious. But the one time that I had a real lapse in my well-being, my mental health, was depression. And it was grief, because I was grieving what I believed was the opportunity to have a family, you know. And thankfully, you know, I had enough knowledge to, I was suicidal and I was totally thinking about killing myself, which seems crazy. And I was working as a health coach at the time. And it was definitely like deep emotional trauma. It was probably even partly the grief of losing my father, like him leaving. There was probably layers and layers of it. And this was the catalyst for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just thankful that I had people around me to talk me off the ledge, literally, and also, you know, the knowledge and foresight to not go walk into a GP's office and, you know, solve it and numb it with that. And, you know, I cried, you know, rivers of tears, and I thrashed around and I, you know, fantasized about taking my own life and planned it and did silly things like that. And then I, you know, worked through it and released it and created something different for myself. So you're right. I think underpinning any mental health, sort of low level mental health, maybe not some of the more sort of psychiatric disorders is underlying deep emotional trauma that needs to be resolved.
Yeah, and maybe if grief doesn't feel like the thing, it's anger, pain, it's, you know, these kind of core wounds that as children we are not taught how to feel and how to transmute. And like going back to that idea that emotion is energy in motion, if we stay stuck in that level of the anger or the fear or grief, we are limiting the potential for that energy. If we can transmute that energy that's in motion or wants to be in motion, not stagnant, not stuck and not held in the body, then yeah, it can be transformed into inspired action, into, like I said, compassion and these qualities that we do want to cultivate and use our energy consciously for.
And I think just to add to that, because that emotional awareness and, you know, I think working with our emotional wounds is really important. But just from a sort of external factor management perspective, I just want to add in, and, you know, I talk about this in all of my, and I've spoken about it before in previous seasons of the podcast, but in terms of particularly anxiety, probably more than depression, but they're both relevant, we need to think about the load that our nervous system is exposed to, especially with anxiety, because it's, I always call it the bucket. So our body is like a bucket, and there's all these things going that are triggering our nervous system to either be in run from a predator mode or in rest and digest or sort of calm mode, parasympathetic. And unfortunately, we're just overloading our nervous system so that it's always in that run from a predator mode. Now, that is going to give you a low or high level of anxiety in your day-to-day sort of being. So in addition to looking at working in and perhaps practicing yoga and perhaps working with a therapist or whatever it might be to uncover some of those wounds, or even just day-to-day being more aware and accepting of your emotions, we also need to look at what else is going into that bucket. You know, are we sitting all day? Are we working in a UV flooded natural light naked environment? Are we completely disconnected from nature? Are we living in an apartment building suspended from the ground and not getting any earthing? You know, are we not getting any sun? Are we in a toxic relationship? Obviously, I could go on and on and on, but all of these things are so common, and they are just cultivating a high production of that cortisol in our body, and that is just going to make it even harder for us to even look at our emotions, and harder for us to come back to a state of homeostasis, which is probably more, you know, of the parasympathetic nervous system being the main operating system for day-to-day activities.
Yeah, feeling balanced.
Feeling
basically.
Balanced, yeah. I mean, it shouldn't be parasympathetic dominant either. It needs to be
the balance point is always changing.
Yes.
I mean, that's the whole nature of balance. It's not static.
No.
So I just want to mention the Ayurvedic lens of understanding anxiety. So we know the doshas. We've got Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. I'm not going to talk about Kapha and Pitta. I'm going to talk specifically about Vata, because that is the one that is connected to feeling anxious. And if you have either a Vata dominant dosha, meaning that's your dominant constitution.
Me. Thank you very much.
Which is the, we can take it back to, that's the air element. And if you do have that constitution, or if you have a Vata imbalance, meaning there's too much Vata in your system and that's not your natural state, that's not your natural constitution, then you are more likely than not going to have a tendency to feel anxious and scattered and generally ungrounded. And there's lots of different things that we can do to help balance that out. So first of all, I'm going to just say very quickly, diet. So eating a non-Vata inducing diet, which
grounding foods,
cooked foods, warm foods, in a nutshell. And I'll link to some helpful resources on Vata balancing diet in the show notes. But we're also looking to mitigate that through a yoga practice or a meditation practice. So being still, moving slowly, literally slowing down the pace of everything.
So no F45s every single day, no running for miles, none of that stuff for a barter.
No, that's going to just add to the tendency. It's going to, like increases like. That's kind of the understanding with Ayurveda. So if you're doing, if you have a predominantly Vata constitution and you're doing a Vata-inducing workout, you're eating Vata-inducing foods, then naturally you're going to produce more of that Vata energy, which is going to lead to an excess, meaning an imbalance, i.e. anxiety. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
But do you have any recommendations for managing anxiety?
So I feel like we are always recommending this, but for me, I suppose if I think about what I need to do, and I do have a Vata dosha, and you know, so I am, my nervous system is more sensitive and likes to be stressed out, which is why I say I have a predisposition to anxiety. So the things that work for me are, well, actually this one harks back to episode 4 on alcohol. Mostly avoiding alcohol is one of the best things that I have found for managing anxiety, because as we discussed in that episode, so if you haven't listened, go back and listen to that episode, but it actually depletes serotonin, it increases cortisol levels, messes with the blood sugar, and all of those things will affect your mood. So I think that has been one of the things that has been over time really helpful for me in terms of managing my mood and managing my capacity to deal with any other stresses. I wish I could say, and obviously you can again go back to last season and listen to coffee. But if I have a client with coffee, with anxiety or sleep disorders, I will always beg them to come off coffee, even though we all love it and we all want our little cup of joe every day. But probably the most profound thing that I have found and that I now am militant about, and I very rarely miss a day, is meditation. And so I just have a daily meditation practice that is mostly 15 to 30. It's probably more 15, but on odd occasions, probably once or twice a week, I get a 30-minute session in. And I really think that that has just been a profound tool to recalibrate my nervous system and really help me to stay centered and really stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
My recommendation is, I don't think we've even said this in the imagine that Abhyanga. I mean, I will say that for, especially for balancing Vata, Abhyanga, which is the self massage technique that I always bang on about, is probably one of the most nourishing Vata balancing practices you can do. But I'm not going to say that today. What I'm going to say is grounding. Getting your feet on the ground. This is another major contributor to why so many people are feeling increasingly anxious, is our disconnection from the earth. So there's loads of research, really cool research on grounding now, which we will link to. But I guess the hot tip is you want to just get out with bare feet on the ground, and you, even better if that ground can be a little bit damp or wet, helps to conduct the negative ions. And you will just want to stand there, walk there for, you know, maybe, I think the transmission actually happens instantaneously. As soon as you step onto the ground, it discharges your body of any excess electricity. It's like grounding, you know, all of, maybe people don't know this, but all of our houses in Australia are grounded with a massive pole that goes into the earth and grounds the electricity that is flooding through our house, right? We also need that same grounding to discharge any excess electricity, which is all about the nervous system again.
Yeah.
So Vata is also in charge of our nervous system, which really can think about as the system that's conducting energy, electricity, through our body. So anyway, we want to get our feet on the ground, walk or just stand or whatever, and you want to be there for like at least 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is, I'm sure people feel this. I feel this. As soon as I step out, like, onto the beach, which the beach is the best because it's like the water, the ground is a little bit wet.
And there's magnesium and different sort of...
Exactly. You feel automatically that discharge of the nervous system.
The calming.
And, yeah, the effect of the negative ions being calming on the nervous system. So that's my recommendation. It doesn't cost anything. You don't need to download an app. Just get your feet on the ground.
And my recommendation to cycle back and maybe give something specific is to download a meditation app. So, you know, there's
lots.
What's
your current fave?
Current fave, I think I might have recommended this on another podcast, and it is One Giant Mind. One Giant Mind and also Insight Timer, because I'm going back to Insight Timer a little bit. It's got a million different meditations, different times. And I think I might have recommended them both, but I'll just re-recommend because I know people don't listen to every episode. But yeah, you can also just use the timer on it and choose your own background noise and choose if you want bells and things like that. But I really think a meditation practice is key for well-being.
Totally agree. And I'm going to give myself a little plug here as well and say that in my Paths to You program, there are loads of meditations for discharging excess vata, so balancing for all the different doshas, and also cultivating specific types of energy. So check that out.
And I think that's a wrap.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Elevate. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed recording it. For any further updates with me, you can come along and follow me at Instagram. I'm at Shopkins Health.
And if you'd like to stay tuned with me throughout the week, I'm at yoga_alchemy on Instagram. And what we would love right now is if you can hit subscribe, leave us some stars, leave us a few words, any questions or feedback, we love to read. So keep it coming and have an amazing day.
Hey, it's Amanda. I'm quickly popping in to tell you about a special offer that you won't find anywhere else but here. So with the code ELEVATE, that's ELEVATE, simply pop that in to receive your first month off free in Paths to You. And once you're inside, there's a suggestion of exactly how to start your journey. Of course, you can also choose your own adventure, create your own pathway, maybe starting with Ayurveda and discovering your dosha, maybe moving through the Passion, Power and Purpose workshops, which is all about living a more meaningful life. And you'll have unlimited support through all of the embodiment and yoga practices. One of the most beautiful things about Paths to You is that you'll receive access to our free and private membership area, which is where your like-minded, like-hearted crew are hanging out. And you'll also get access to my online class, which happens once a month, where you can ask me any questions that you might have about your practice, about health, and of course, soul alignment. So I hope you find this episode super elevating, and I'll see you in Paths to You.